Welcome to Conversations with Big Rich. This is an interview-style podcast. These interviewed are all involved in the off-road industry. Being involved, like all of my guests are, is a lifestyle, not just a job. I talk to past, present, and future legends, as well as business owners, employees, media, and land use warriors, men and women who have found their way into this exciting and addictive lifestyle we call off-road. We discuss their personal history, struggles, successes, and reboots. We dive into what drives them to stay active in off-road. We all hope to shed some light on how to find a path into this world that we live and love and call off-road.
Whether you're crawling the Red Rocks of Moab or hauling your toys to the trail, Maxxis has the tires you can trust for performance and durability. Four wheels or two. Maxxis tires are the choice of champions because they know that whether for work or play, for fun or competition, Maxxis tires deliver. Choose Maxxis. Tread victoriously.
Have you seen 4LO magazine yet? 4LO magazine is a high-quality, well-written, four-wheel drive-focused magazine for the enthusiast market. If you still love the idea of a printed magazine, something to save and read at any time, 4LO is the magazine for you. 4LO cannot be found in stores, but you can have it delivered to your home or place of business. Visit 4LOmagazine.com to order your subscription today. On today's episode of Conversations with Big Rich, I have Perry Kalar, the daughter of John Perry Miller, otherwise known as Jack Miller, the founder of Mastercraft Safety, which Perry ran herself for 20 years, to talk about family, business, and off-road. Perry, it is so good to have you on the podcast this morning to talk about your history, your dad's history, your dad, John Perry Miller. He is known as Jack Miller and was the originator of Mastercraft Safety. We'll get into all of that, but let's first, I wanted to say thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm excited to share history of our family and our love of racing.
Well, let's jump right in and start at the very beginning. Where was your dad born and raised?
He was born in Omaha, but raised in San Diego.
How did he get from Omaha to San Diego?
He went into the Army when he was real young, and he eloped with my mom in San Diego, and then got stationed all over the place.
So he met her in San Diego while he was in the service?
Yes.
Okay. And those early years in Omaha, I guess he stayed there until he went into the service.
I think he was here most of his youth.
Oh, okay. So yeah. He probably moved with his parents then?
Yeah, his mom.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then what do you know about those early years of your dad being in San Diego before, say, the military? What kind of activities did they do?
Well, he did cowboying down in Mission Valley in San Diego before it was a shopping, before it was a freeway and shopping center.
Wow.
I think he and his buddies got into a little bit of trouble here and there.
That's guys with a little too much time on their hands. I understand that.
Yes.
And then he decided to go into the military. Do you know if he played sports or anything like that while he was in school?
He used to wrestle, I believe. Okay. He was a wrestler.
Then when he got into the military there in San Diego, that was the, was he Air Force? No, that would be...
Army, yeah.
Army,
he was
right.
In the Army and became a parachute rigger, which is where he learned how to sew. And he ended up retiring after, is it 20 years, the usual amount, in 1969. And he was a soldier. He went to Korea and he went to Vietnam twice. Once he was on crutches with a broken leg going back over.
Oh, wow.
He was just a career soldier. And then when he came home, he, for some reason, got this idea to build a dune buggy race car. And so they did that in our garage.
Okay. And when he came home, that was 1969, and he retired as a major?
Lieutenant Colonel.
Lieutenant Colonel. Okay.
Yeah.
He decided to build a dune buggy, and that was right around that 69-70 era.
Yes.
And you were how old were you? I don't want to bring up your age, but you were born before then.
Yes, I was in middle school, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. He started when he got out of the Army. He started working for TaylorMade.
Okay.
Which he designed with Al Taylor, the original suspension seat. And Al Taylor was doing other types of work as well and was veering off from trying to make a race car seat. And so my dad, after a year or two, built one in his garage, and they started Miller Industries, and my mom would sew purses in the garage, and that's what the first product was of Miller Industries. And then the Mastercraft seats came along a while later.
Interesting. First came purses.
Yes.
That's awesome. I mean,
yeah.
And then, so he was working for TaylorMade after retiring from the Army, was making suspension seats with them, and then started Miller Industries because Taylor got away from, that's when he left Taylor at that point?
When yeah, he got he away left from Taylor it? At that point, yeah.
Okay. And what do you remember about those early years?
Oh my God, it was so fun. Well, not only did we had a Corvair race car that never made it off the pavement, so it never even finished a race. But they went to all the races. My dad set up a pit system, much like BFG has today. In fact, at one point, we had a meeting with Spirit, the Spirkoff group, and showed them like how we would set up our pits and all that. And they kind of started doing that. So we went all over Baja as kids with our families. There was like two or three families that all traveled together, and best of times.
And doing the pit servicing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My job was the fire extinguisher.
Excellent.
When they welded. And then I also kept times.
Okay. And those were score races or other organizations?
There were score. I don't even remember. I do know we went out to Borrego a lot.
Okay.
For those races. And my mom actually raced as well. My mom and my brother and my dad. My mom raced with another gal. Her name was Pat Yancey, and she raced in the Baja 500. And they had a buggy shop, the Yanceys. And then she also raced with a friend of ours named Donna Gillespie, who was really successful at it for a while in Borrego. And this is before they had window nets and they had, you know, half the safety equipment that they normally used.
Right. Just a seat belt.
Yeah.
Nobody exactly. thought about yeah. harnesses.
I have a picture of my mom getting ready for the 500, wearing her wig and smoking a cigarette as she put her helmet on.
She wore a wig with her helmet.
Oh, wow. And they had a silk driving suits too. Pale blue.
That's awesome. And the, did your dad raced at that time also?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He raced his Corvair and my brother raced with him. And eventually they stopped racing, but continued pitting and making that his main thing to do. My brother went on and partnered with Tom Bryant for a little bit. They had a VW.
And your brother's name?
Is Mike Miller.
Mike Miller. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the whole family was involved with racing.
Yes.
Are you like the youngest?
No, I had a younger sister. Her name was Sharon, and she was 18 when she was killed by a drunk driver.
Okay.
So she participated in all the family stuff. And at that point, I had moved out and I was doing my own thing for a while and I got away from the racing world.
How was that getting away from the racing world? Did you need to get away from it or just happened?
No. I just grew up and all of a sudden there were boys and cars and
distractions.
Things to do. Yeah. got a job. Well, I worked at Mastercraft when I was like in middle school, high school. I was the janitor, and I had to go in every night and sweep up and take the trash out to our trash bin that was in front of our house. And it was this big field. And we lived right next to a farm, and we had horses, but or a stable. And I would take the trash out and throw the trash in the dumpster, and chickens would roost in there, and they'd come screaming out, and it was always, I was always kind of scared. So I kind of didn't do it very often. And my brother fired me a lot. And my mom would ask him to hire me back because it was too expensive, you know, for her to just give me money when I needed it then versus me earning money. And she says, use your own money. So I got hired a lot. So in 1981, when I decided I wanted to come back to Mastercraft, I told my mom, and we discussed it, and I was going to work in the office. And my brother goes, Perry, you're fired. Perry, you're fired. My mom says, what are you doing, Mike? He says, I'm just practicing. But
that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of joking going on in the family.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We all had CB radios, and he was a stitch maker, and I was broom pusher, and I can't remember some of the other names. But later on, when we started having internet, I became seat lady.
Seat lady.
Because everyone would go, oh, that's the seat lady. So that's where that email address came from.
Nice. And when you came back to Mastercraft, what were your duties?
My mom and I shared office duties. And then when my sister died, my mom basically quit. And then my dad slowly drifted into setting up a Mothers Against Drunk Drivers program down in San Diego and became really involved with that. My brother and I ran it for a while. And then I think about a year later, he went to LA and got married. And so I had it on my own. And then a couple of years later, I met my husband, Buzz, who owned a company called HPS Oil. And he also ended up working at Bilstein.
Oh, okay. And how did he get into, to Bilstein? How did that fall into place?
Well, he worked at Autofab. Okay. Out in Santee. And he did shock work for them. Okay. And he had customers all over the place. And then when we got married and decided to start a family, he realized he needed to have a real job. And so that's when he went to Bilstein. And he was like the manager for the aftermarket stuff.
Okay.
In the back. Yeah.
So stay in the racing, family in the racing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he continued to co-ride with a lot of people. And then he got real... We ended up being partners with his best friend, Mike Lund, and that's who he rode with for years.
Okay. And did you race yourself?
Nope.
Never raced?
Nope.
Okay.
Wish I had.
You wish you had.
Pre-run.
Okay. You pre-ran. There you go.
Yeah.
And what were the times like, you know, for a family chasing races, say, in Baja?
Well, we didn't do any chasing because there was really no communications. I remember being out in the middle of the desert. One of my funny stories is that James Garner, who's used to be a movie star,
right?
He was racing, and we were out in the middle of nowhere, and it was pitch black. His car pulls in, and there must have been 30 to 50 women all standing around giggling with cameras, all excited. Like, I don't know where they came from. And he gets out of the car and he walks over and he says to my mom that he needed to go to the restroom. And so my mom pointed over to, a dark area, and he turns around to the group and says, ladies, please, no pictures. that was what I remembered of that. But we used to have soda cans taped to the roll bars, and they would have stuck stubs and tickets. So if every time you went to a checkpoint, you stopped and you got a ticket. And so when you finished the race, you had to have all the tickets for each checkpoint. And then if you got stuck, you you gave this to the checkpoint, the sex stub, and then they would radio it to someone, and then we would find out later on if our car broke down or not.
Right.
Because okay. there wasn't like a BFG relay or anything at that point.
Right. It was truly the Wild West.
Oh, yeah. My dad created this little outhouse that we used out of like race car seat material and stuff. And that was kind of nice because you could go in there and have privacy as a girl. But, you know, we camped. We had friends with motorhomes and stuff like that. But usually we camped out in tents. And he made these racks that went on top of our VW variant and on top of the Ford truck. And they would lift up, and then it had a tent attached to it so you could sleep on top of the car.
Basically a rooftop tent like they have now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So your dad was quite the innovator.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. He made a bumper for his Datsun, and it was that corrugated steel, and it was so heavy that it was bigger and heavier than the actual truck. We used to tease him about it. If it needed 6 nails, he put in 10.
Overbuild, yes.
Yes.
And what were some of the other things that I know that with, you know, that it started with the seats, uh-huh, and then ended up window nets and all the...
Yeah. Yeah, I sent a package over to Kurt of a bunch of stuff, and there was a picture of a window net in there. And that was what my dad was going to these like club meetings, like score meetings or whatever they were. And they discussed that they needed to have, you know, that safety issue, you know, or that safety item brought in. And so my dad designed them and started making them. And I used to do the nets too. You'd have to get the nets prepped and then you have to sew them and do all sorts of stuff. And, it was always fun because we get the funniest patterns. This one couple that we knew, or we didn't know then, but they sent me this cardboard pattern, and they had drawn the net. They drew in the Mastercraft. They drew in all the lines, you know, where the netting was,
right?
And little holes where it was like I could have used that for the net. And since then, we've been lifelong friends. Ever since that net pattern, it was just so good that I had to compliment them.
Just wasn't a cardboard cutout, so this is the size of my window.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't newspaper and all that.
I would imagine that you had all sorts of materials sent in that were the patterns.
Yes. Another funny thing that happened later on when I was by myself, excuse me, I would go up to the Spierkoffs. They had a Halloween party, and I wore a race car seat, like I cut a hole in the headrest. It was an old cover, and I just was wearing it. And as the evening went on, it started kind of smelling awful. And I realized that someone had just peed in the seat because they were racing and they didn't get out. And I didn't realize that until I was wearing it. And then I took it off, of course. And so some other friends, they came up with, his name was Brian Kibbs, came up with the idea of doing the piss kit, which is the personal sanitation system kit. And what I did was I bought they're like an open-ended condom with a rubber fitting and a tube, and the tube would run down the leg, and then the guys could wear that while they're racing, and it wouldn't be, you know, mess up the seats. And I had it in a little brown bag. So a lot of people would just come up and say, you know, I need 10 little brown bags. And it was like the guys were always embarrassed about buying them, but we sold tons of them. And those were our piss kits.
Piss kits. That's awesome. Oh, Lord. And then you guys got into harnesses as well?
No, we never did the harnesses.
Okay.
We were in development with the Fast Attack vehicles that went over for Desert Storm.
Right.
I got an order for a bunch, and normally it would take me a month to make them, and I had like almost a week. And it was the week before Parker in 1991. And if I didn't get the seats done, I wasn't going to go to the race. And Buzz and I always set up contingency together so that he could kind of pop over and help me out, because I'd have a 3-year-old and I had a 9-month-old. And so I always had a friend that would come help with the kids and help with sales. And it was just everyone always came and hung out with us in contingency because we had a nice place to sit. So,
all the seats.
Yeah, exactly. And if I didn't get the seats for the fast attack vehicles made in time, I would have to stay home. And it was just a miracle that we got them done. I couldn't believe it. And I was able to go to the Parker 400 in 1991. And that was the race that Buzz died in a race car crash. So I was there. So it was, otherwise I would have been home and had someone tell me versus hearing it on the radio and being at the hospital and all that. So I was really grateful that the fast attack vehicle seats went through, you know, got done quickly. And I had an employee, it was like, why don't you take a break? She goes, I can't, I'm making these seats for my country. And we were so proud of that. It was exciting.
And of course we didn't know at that point that they were going into Desert Storm, or was this post Desert Storm?
Yeah, we did know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that must have been pretty hard on you to lose your husband in a race like that while you're there, and your kids.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that would have been like.
It was really horrible, but the entire off-road world supported me so much. And there were times when, you know, at the races, I might have some bad behavior, but no one ever, you know, everyone just kept an eye on me and made sure I didn't get in trouble. You know, I go out drinking and dancing, but I didn't ever do that kind of stuff at home as I was being a mom and a business owner. But right. At the races, I let loose a little bit. And I had so many people that were just kind and gracious to me. That was the worst and best year of my life because I found out that I could survive anything. And because that was the worst thing that, you know, losing my sister was horrible, but losing my husband was worse. He's still a part of our life. I mean, I've remarried. He's still, you know, we have pictures of him in the house and we tell funny stories about Buzz. And I'm really lucky and grateful that I've had the blessed life I've had, because that tragedy ended up showing me that I could survive.
Right. It ended up being a growth moment. Yes.
Oh yeah. Most definitely. Most definitely.
And let's talk a little bit about your dad and what he did outside of racing and development. You said he started or worked with the MAD group in San Diego. Did he get that started in San Diego? Okay.
Yeah. He and my brother were, he was the president. My brother was the co-president and I was the secretary. My mom just kind of shut down a lot, you know, when that happened. And everyone kind of pulled away from everyone. It was really a bizarre, the family dynamics were just so changed. But he started the court monitoring system where he would go to every hearing for, you know, any, like if someone contacted him and said, my person was hurt or killed. And then he would take that case and he would go to the courts and monitor, you know, what's happening. And I found lists of different dates and things that were going on and continuances and stuff like that. And then he also did the victim outreach program where we would have meetings and the victims' families would come and we would talk and that kind of a thing. Eventually it got to be so much that my dad left Mastercraft to pursue this full time. And he also got involved in hypnotherapy. Eventually this MAD was too much for us to handle. We just didn't have the resources. And another family in Escondido experienced the same loss, and they ended up taking the MAD chapter over. And this is in 1981 to maybe 1983. My dad went on to get a second degree in hypnotherapy and counseling. And then he became the nighttime program director for the Miramar Naval Air Station, Air Force Station.
Okay.
Naval Air Station. Yeah. And so people would go into, you know, rehab, and he was the program director for all that. And he loved helping people.
Yeah, it sounds that way. That's giving back to the community in a huge way.
Well, another thing I failed to mention is he was an alcoholic. And I remember as a kid going to AA meetings with him. And it was really kind of a church for us in a way. But he was always bringing home people that he would try and help. And so we always had a real busy household. We always had, you know, people. I'd wake up in the morning and like Ivan Stewart would be having a cup of coffee, you know, in the kitchen while he's waiting for my dad to finish something up or, you know, that kind of a thing.
Right.
There were always people dropping. And back then we upholstered the cars. Like there was door panels and, you know, it was all pretty. And so my dad made these little metal plates that you glue to the door or something. And it says made by Mastercraft. And then it has a place where you would engrave it. And he would do that for some of the cars. I still have some of those.
Oh, wow.
But we always had an open door. So
and that's,
he was a helper.
That's pretty great. And so then when your dad stepped away, you kind of took over the reins of Mastercraft?
Yeah, my brother and I were there for a while. And then my brother went to L.A. To get married. And by then I had met Buzz and I was really involved in the whole thing. And, you know, I was back into doing contingency. That's how I met him. And then we would go to the races together. And that's when I took over. And then we moved it to the house in 19. So it, in 19, let me see here. In 1977, we moved the shop from the house to down in Chula Vista into an actual industrial building. We also had another product that we did, and it was the I think Medicheds. I'm not sure what they're called now, but they were green, like roll out with slats in them and sticks in them that were like, if there's an accident, you can put the person on it and move them. So they were immobile. So we did those. And then we also contacted with another company that made the Shukra back support, which is like used in Recaros and stuff like that. So we did that early on, but that didn't really pan out too well for us.
Okay.
We just bit off more than we could chew. But my brother was there for a couple years and then I took over.
Did your brother race or anything after getting married and stepping away?
No, he stepped away long before that. I think that it just got to the point where, you know, like into the 80s, it wasn't, you know, in the end of the 70s is when they both stopped racing. Everyone stopped racing.
Okay. And then you ran Mastercraft for quite a few years then on your own.
About 20.
Yep, about 20 years on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, say at that 20-year mark, what was it, you know, how many employees did you have or what was the facility like?
Well, interesting enough, in 1987, after my oldest daughter was born, we moved it to our garage and it's like an 8-car garage. And so we had it there and we had like 6 employees. We had had up to 20 before in the other place, but we started farming out some of our work. We had another company do like our tool bags and things for us. And that's how I met my current husband is he managed that shop. And so, he made all the tool bags and then, we made limit straps for Rancho suspension and for like a lot of work for Race Ready Off-Road. But we farmed stuff out. So we didn't have a huge overhead of employees.
Okay. But you were in that 8-car garage, you were producing at least all the seats.
Yeah, we produced everything except the tool bags.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty awesome. And so you downsized in size from a shop in Chula Vista to the 8-car garage.
Right.
And still was very productive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Excellent. And then
that's where we made the Fast Attack vehicle seats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is in the 8-car garage.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's doing the framework, the frames and everything.
Well, no. So that all started with Unique Metal Products built the frame. Tommy Bryant built the frames originally back in the 70s. And then we switched over to Unique Metal Products and they did it. And then from Unique, we went to Robbie. And I had known Robbie through AutoFab. That's how Buzz knew him. And we were friends. And so Robbie, I think he had to, like, he went over to AutoFab and had John show him how to do a certain type of weld for the seat frame and or bend it or something. And so Robbie was my supplier forever. And then eventually I had wanted to sell the company and he just decided he wanted to buy it. So that was perfect.
And the timing was right.
Yes. Yes. I had been trying to sell it. I was in talks, but it was taking a long time. And I felt better knowing, because I knew Robbie real well. And I knew that he would do well with it. And he far exceeded my expectations as far as making something of the company.
Right. Yeah, I met Robbie standing in at what they call Potato Salad Hill in Moab during Easter Jeep Safari.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was there in the late 90s.
Well, he always had a smile. I mean, he was...
Yes.
He always had a smile and a friendly hug and... he used to always tell me he wanted to do right by my dad, which was sweet.
That's important.
Yeah.
So then what, how did your dad pass away?
Actually, he had Alzheimer's.
That's right. I did read
that.
Okay.
Yeah. He got Alzheimer's and he passed in 2007. And then I had sold the business in 99, November of 99. And then my parents kind of built out half of the garage as a little apartment. And they were going to stay there and then travel in their motorhome. And about a year after that, my dad got diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And so they didn't travel anymore. And he ended up, you know, living in a facility. But the funny thing is he was such a soldier that the first time he was at a real low risk place and they had like this 3-foot wall inside the main living area that the memory patients were locked in so they couldn't get lost. And he saw these two nurses going. And so he waited until they were going out and he kind of brushed through them and escaped. So then they said you couldn't stay there anymore. And so then he went to the VA and they kept him in the psych ward for a little bit, trying to find him a new place. And he thought he worked there. So we'd go up and visit and he'd show us around his office. and then we found a place out in the lakeside and the first day there scaled that 5-foot fence. And so then they put him in the 12-foot fence and he never was able to scale it. But when we would go visit, he didn't have words, but he'd look at you and he'd like point to his eyes with two fingers and then point to another area like lingo, you know, like he was planning recognizance or something. So he was always just ready to go. Always just ready to go.
Trying to figure out a way to get out.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. He was fun.
And your mom?
She passed in February of 15, and she had severe rheumatoid arthritis. And she went on to, she did some traveling, you know, after my dad was in his nursing home, but she, you know, she was at home with us.
Okay. I can relate to that. My wife and I are taking care of my parents, which are 85 and 89.
And oh, man.
We're living – a few years ago, I used to have my office here back in the early 90s – or early 2000s when I first started putting on events. And I did – we remodeled my office area so that caregivers – you know, if they needed a caregiver, they would have a place to stay. Well, we ended up becoming the caregivers about a year and a half ago. So
it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. I'm still doing it.
It is. It is.
It's, yeah. My husband's father lived with us for like 20 years, and he and my mom became compadres. They would, she couldn't drive real well with her hands, but he could see stuff and he could help her. And they would go on little errands, and it just terrified us, but they were best friends. He passed. Well, actually, this is the whole thing. My husband's mom passed in February of 22, and then Pops passed in June of 22, and his mother's husband still lives up in Poway, which is about 20-30 minutes away, and I take care of him. So I'm in charge of all of his, you know, I go up there and take care of him and manage the people that go see him and stuff like that. So I'm still caregiving. I hope to not at some point.
Right.
We joke that we've never been alone. I hope we like each other.
That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have kids?
Yes, I have two and he has two. So we have four. And then we have four grandkids, and one of the daughters is staying over in the apartment. She got a job transferred out here. And so her 15-year-old and her 12-year-old girls live here with us in the house, and we love it because we get to be around them. The other two grandkids we have live up in Sacramento, and it's a 11-year-old girl and an 8-year-old boy.
Okay.
And,
so they're up here by me then.
Where are you at?
I'm in Placerville, California.
Oh, God, that's the net people that I was telling you about. They live there.
Oh, really?
And whenever I my best friend used to live there, ironically, she passed 10 years to the day that my dad passed. But I used to go up there to see her all the time. And then when my daughter and her husband moved up there, I went up to see them. So now when I go up, I have to see about six different people. So I have to make long trips.
Right.
So if I come up again, I'll reach out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what was the one thing that you would say that your dad instilled in you that helped you get through all these times?
Boy, that's a tough one. Give me a second here to think about that.
No worries.
I don't know how. Just, it's going to be what it is, and you have to make the best of it.
Right.
And my mom was a real strong woman. I mean, she basically held everything together because he was gone a lot, you know, up until I was in my teens.
Right, being in the military.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Everything was quality, and one of his most common comments was, the description of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. And I've always remembered that.
That is definitely the definition. Yes.
And I participate in it quite often, but when he passed, or when he knew he was getting Alzheimer's, he sat down and says, I'd like to make a list of things that are important that I want to remember. And I'm going to put it in my wallet. So I said, okay. And we sat down and talked about it, and I may even have it. Let me see if I can pull it out real quick. And some of them are so simple. Unfortunately, because we didn't know about Alzheimer's, when that happens, you don't have words anymore.
Right.
So let me see here if I have it. I think I do. Yes. So it says, think that good things will happen. Express gratitude to a loved one. Put your gripes away in a box. Be patient with an annoying person. Do something special for yourself. Reach out to someone who needs comfort. Focus deeply on each moment. Learn from a mistake. Look closely at a flower or tree that you haven't noticed before.
Wow.
And then on the back, of that, we put the 12 steps of recovery from AA.
Yep.
You know, oh no, actually it was a serenity prayer. That's on the back of the card. So we handed those little cards out at the funeral, and I still carry the original one that was in his wallet in mine.
That's pretty profound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gives you thought.
It does. I mean, because you're just in such a hurry in your life to get through things that, you know, you don't stop and take those moments.
What about yourself that you try to instill in your kids?
Integrity.
What's that? Integrity? Integrity?
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, doing the right. Another thing my dad always said was do the right thing when no one's watching, even if no one's watching.
Right.
And I've always tried to do that. When I end my phone calls with my daughters, I'll say, you know, I love you. Be kind. Because we forget to be kind. And my one daughter always teases me because she's an educator now. She's a counselor. And she goes, I always remember how you used to always make me, you used to always say, go find the lonely kid by themselves and sit with them and share your lunch.
Right.
Yeah. So, I guess I have a social conscience. But yeah, I think the integrity is part of it, is a strong part for me. And I'm very self-aware and friendly. I mean, I care about people.
Excellent. And do you?
And we all have a wicked sense of humor, so that's kind of detrimental sometimes.
But you know what? Humor is very important. That's one of the things that our household is full of.
Well, we have a lot of sarcasm too, which, you know, like I make jokes about Buzz and stuff, and people that don't know me look at me like, you horrid person. But the people that do know me know that how my comic relief was that was how I dealt with it, was to make jokes and, you know, haha, it's only a flesh wound. I can carry on, that kind of a thing.
Right.
So, humor is very important.
And what do you think is the legacy from your family that will be left?
Oh, well, that's hard to say because, you know, someone asked me, how come you don't go to the races anymore? And it's like, because I don't know anybody. There's no one left to remember our legacy. And Mastercraft, you know, kind of faded out. So it's kind of hard to say. I just think back then racing was a family affair for everybody. We were all families, you know, and I don't know what kind of legacy that I would want. Just that it was a good product. We were honest. We helped when we could.
Right. Absolutely. Quality product.
Yeah. Well, when I first came into the office, we had a thing that, you know, it had lifetime warranty on a race car seat. And so if the frame broke, we'd put a new frame under it. And then if the lining tore or it needed something, we'd fix the lining. And if there was a rip in the cover, we'd fix that. And finally I said, Dad, we're only going to sell so many seats for the rest of our lives.
Right. With a lifetime can't warranty.
Have a lifetime warranty.
Yeah. But every rate, you'd have to basically put a seat in every race car.
Yeah, exactly. And then keep doing it over and over for free.
Right. So once you stepped out of Mastercraft, did you continue working or doing something else? Are you active now in some kind of employment or?
Well, no, I took a year off and I was with a lunch duty mom.
Okay.
And that was kind of a hit to my ego. Having been person of the year once in school.
Right.
But my kids liked it and I really did enjoy it. I ended up working for Kaiser Permanente in the membership administration department. They're a healthcare organization. And I just retired from there this past October. It was 22 years.
Wow.
So yeah.
20 years running Mastercraft.
Right.
And 22 then years with
at Kaiser.
And a couple years in between stints where you didn't do, you know, you were lunch mom.
Yeah.
And
it was about a year or so in between leaving Robbie and then coming into Kaiser.
Okay. And when you were young and you stepped out of the house, you said, and then you came back. What did you do in that meantime, in between?
I was like 20, 21, 22, that kind of a thing. I was working for a, it was called Sunset Pools, as a, an office person. And then I worked for a company called Sunshine Mining. And then when they laid me off, I decided I talked to my mom. I said, Mom, I want to work part-time. And she goes, okay. And so I thought, okay, cool. This is going to be great. I can sleep in all morning. I can come to work at noon, work till 5, take a nap, and then go party all night like I have been, right? And when I showed up for work, she goes, no, you're going to work 8 to 12. I'm like, oh, no. It ruined everything.
It's so. Like I had a landscape company at one time, and I ended up having to make sure that everybody showed up on Monday.
Uh-huh.
After a long weekend, I had to make sure that paydays were on Mondays instead of Fridays.
That is clever. And I should tell my husband that.
I was able to eliminate the absences. I was able to eliminate having to go bail employees out over the weekend.
Right.
Because by, and then, and what caused that is that I had more of the wives and girlfriends showing up on Fridays to collect the paychecks than I was handing to the employees.
Oh, that's funny.
And, we worked hard and we played hard. And,
right.
There was, landscape installation and, digging trenches and, doing all that kind of stuff is not physically easy. And, especially in the Sacramento foothill area, where the temperatures are hot as well. And dry. So it was, it was hard work, but boy, on the weekends, the guys liked to party and had to move the paychecks to Mondays.
I love it. I'm going to tell my husband that. So they do all sorts of sewn items as well. They make limit straps for Race Ready. They make tool bags. They work on some of the race cars for different little special things they want. So he's friends with some of the same people I'm friends with. And I have to say that Facebook has been a godsend for me, because when I left Robbie's, I was on vacation and I was going to come back. And then I just thought, you know what? I don't want to come back. This isn't fun. And so I lost contact with so many of my people that just supported me through such horrible times. And I felt very lost, and I felt like I lost a big piece of myself. But then as Facebook grew, it was like, oh, I'm friends with the people that I knew then that mattered. I'm friends with them now. And we talk all the time on Facebook. So it's really kind of cool.
And is that like one of those Kurt Sherbaum?
No, I never knew Kurt, but he and I have been like friends on Facebook for years, and we'll chat back and forth.
Okay.
But, there's like Ann Chapman. She was a mechanic for, PPI, Precision Prep. There's Melanie Connor, who's Jim Connor's wife. There's, I'm sure I'm missing tons of people, but there's just people that were always my friends and always helped me that I was able to keep in touch with.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I use social media not only to advertise what we're doing, but also to keep an eye, not to keep an eye, but keep a finger on the pulse of our race teams, ex-racers that are no longer competing. I can't believe how many people I've refriended from high school.
Yeah.
And I graduated in 1976. So, that was quite a while ago.
Me too.
Okay.
Same year.
There you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a while, but it's amazing that, what social media can do that way. There's a lot of pluses to it, but just as there are a lot of minuses to it.
Right. One of the, I had a customer's daughter reach out to me, and she goes, "Do you remember us? We did this, we had this." And I went, "Yeah, I remember you guys." And she goes, "Well, I'm their daughter." And I go, "I remember you as well." And just the other day she says, "Are you going to the Mint race?" And I said, "No." And it's because I go, "I don't have a purpose there. I don't have a team I'm pitting for. you know, I don't have much to do. So I wouldn't go. And all the people have changed too.
Right.
Their kids don't know who I am. You know, Walker took me for a pre-run. And that was like one of the most exciting, in Parker actually, I don't remember what year, but he rode like a cowboy. He was driving with his left hand and he kind of had his right hand, you know, like shifting. And it was almost like a cowboy with a lariat. And he was so cool. And someone asked him, do you ever hit cars in front of you to get out of the way? And he goes, oh, I don't hit them. I just give him a little nudge, say hello. But I was like, so, cause he came and got me and said, yeah, you want to go for a ride? And I was like, oh yeah. Someone watch my booth. and went, but I always, you know, he was always really good to me. I was really treated well. Ivan treated me real well. Cal Wells was wonderful to me.
Right.
You know, they always, you know, I wasn't giving them thousands of dollars, but they'd run my decals for me, you know, and they used my products. And so I was always felt very, treasured by them.
Right. Exactly.
Is Judy Smith still around?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good. She was always very kind as well.
Very true. Well, Perry, I'd like to say thank you so much for spending some time and discussing your life and your family's life and, you know, everything that that impacted your life in off-road.
Yeah. I enjoyed telling you my stories, and I love the off-road community, and it was probably one of the major best parts of my life.
That's awesome. And I'd like you to take a look at the nomination page on ormhoff.org and okay. Look at that and see if you'd like to put together an application for your dad to be considered for induction into the Hall of Fame. I'd like to help you with that if okay. You're willing.
That would just be such an honor to do that. Thank you. And I will. Excellent. I'll be reaching out to you soon.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate it. And I want you to have a great rest of your day.
Well, thank you.
And the next time you get up here to the Placerville or Sacramento area, let me know.
I'm going to be up there in September babysitting, so hopefully I'll have some free time that I can do that. I'd love to meet you.
Excellent. Excellent.
All right.
Great.
Well, let me know, like, are you going to have a sample to send me before you actually do it, or you're just going to do it?
Oh, it's just going to be posted. But
wow. Okay.
You'll be very happy with it.
Okay, edit carefully.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is all about, you know, the heritage and legacy of everybody. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're ever bored, call me. I have tons of stories.
Excellent. Sounds great.
All right. You take care, Rick.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Well, that's another episode of Conversations with Big Rich. I'd like to thank you all for listening. If you could do us a favor and leave us a review on any podcast service that you happen to be listening on, or send us an email or a text message or a Facebook message, and let me know any ideas that you have, or if there's anybody that you have that you think would be a great guest, please forward the contact information to me so that we can try to get them on. And always remember, live life to the fullest. Enjoying life is a must. Follow your dreams. And live life with all the gusto you can. Thank you.